Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
It's a well-known fact in agricultural circles, at least, that when cattle have actually been kept inside for the majority of winter, a phenomenon called letting out day occurs, when, of course, the sheds are opened up and they go crazy. And maybe human beings aren't quite as different from cattle and sheep as we like to think, because obviously with Freedom Day on the cards, there might well be a tendency to actually just overindulge and to really address the challenges of that and ways of actually coping with the phenomenon of hangxiety. We're delighted to welcome back to the Midweek Drive that awesomely talented individual, Dr. Alex George. How are you, Alex?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for having me back.
Very good to connect with your good self. Our students are still recovering from your last connection with the University of Lincoln, which is marvellous. So good stuff there. And we've also got the wonderful Ellie Webb, founder of non-alcoholic spirit Kaleno. How are you, Ellie?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you. Very happy to be here.
Excellent. Ellie, first of all, just share with us the whole notion of Kaleno in terms of it's something that clearly the drinking public have been crying out for. Because it has all the benefits, presumably, of socialisation without any of the concomitant problems.
Exactly. So, you know, the rise of well-being has been very clearly documented over the last 4 or 5 years. And it was around that time I found myself doing Dry January for the first time, being in a situation where I didn't want to drink alcohol and I really couldn't find anything that I wanted to drink. So in response to that, and by that I mean I didn't want to drink a glass of water, a Diet Coke or an orange juice, which was normally what the options were. So I decided to go out and create my own non-alcoholic spirit. And so Kaleno is essentially, we've got two spirits. We've got a dark and spicy and a light and zesty. Each is designed to pair the light with a tonic, so you drink that over ice. And our dark spirit, dark and spicy, is designed to pair with soda water or ginger ale. And the idea is you can drink these at the end of the day or when you're socializing with friends and that moment where you maybe normally would have had a G&T or rum and coke or a pint of beer and actually you don't fancy drinking alcohol or you want to moderate, the idea is you can actually sit down, enjoy yourself without the negative effects of a hangover the next day or overindulging.
And balance is everything. I mean, you can go back all the way to the ancient Greeks to say that it's all a case of keeping the humours in balance. And Dr. Alex, from your own point of view, as the UK's first government advisor to mental health, and as well as your excellent work, as I said before, you are a superhero in accident and emergency, A&E, etc. But this is something which clearly is essential because, you know, if alcohol is not good for us, really, is it?
Thank you, Alex. You're always very kind. I think... What we're seeing, and I guess our concern is that, and from the research that's been done by Kaleno, is that the people throughout the lockdown have decreased their alcohol intake, or their moderated alcohol intake excellently. And I guess as we're coming out of lockdown, you talked about a brilliant comparison drawn with cattle. I quite enjoyed that one. You know, as we're coming out of the lockdown, people are kind of excited to go out and celebrate and, you know, going to have a drink and see their friends. And the worry is that people's alcohol tolerances are going to be lower. They probably be much more susceptible to the effects, negative effects of alcohol, both mentally and physically. And of course, we know when people are very drunk, they're more at risk of making decisions they might regret, putting themselves in situations of harm. You could see some of the scenes from the England match to see, you know, some of the scenes that can happen when people drink too much alcohol. And what we're saying is actually moderation is key and kind of trying to find that balance. I enjoy an alcoholic drink, but the way I enjoy the non-alcoholic beverages is to use them to moderate the alcohol. So I might have one of the alcoholic drinks, one non-alcoholic drink, or I might be like, you know what, I'm working the next day or it's a weekday, I'll have the non-alcoholic ones. So it's not about saying, look, let's cut out alcohol. You know, we know, of course, alcohol, you know, there's no alcohol isn't good for you. There's no benefits of alcohol.
It's a poison. It kills the liver.
It's not something to drink and benefit, but we know that's so ingrained in culture and society that we all enjoy it, and we know that making sure we're not drinking, you know, too much alcohol is clearly an important thing. So what we want to say is people have done an amazing job throughout lockdown. They're focused on their well-being, self-care, found moderation and balance in alcohol on the whole. So let's kind of keep that good work going. Enjoy yourselves, but let's be careful both for our mental health and physical health.
And this notion of hangxiety, I mean, it's a wonderful portmanteau word, the hangover anxiety, which more than one in three drinkers have actually suffered from, 16% have said that their hangovers have worsened since lockdown has eased. It's not. I mean, it used to be a badge of honour back in the 20th century to say, well, if you can remember the night before, it obviously wasn't up to much. That's not good now. I mean, we've hopefully got slightly more focused and more appropriate ways of actually framing this.
Yeah, I think we've probably come on quite gladly from that. I think the badge of honour hopefully is going, and people actually realise that waking up the next day feeling anxious because you're hungover, because of the alcohol consumption, the worry about the night before, not feeling yourself, not being able to then sleep very well, all of those kind of effects we know to be very negative. And particularly at the moment, if you think about it in the context of a nation that has a raised baseline of anxiety and worry, quite understandably because of the pandemic.
We just look at the Prime Minister, Alex. There's no need to go any further. That's enough to induce anxiety anyway.
the stress out there, you know, for everyone has been a lot, and anxiety. And I think just adding alcohol to the mix, and you know, in a sense of having it in excessive amounts, you know, we don't need that. No one needs that at the moment. So, you know, let's just look at what fun ways, for example, drinking Clenio, you know, try and find alternative drinks that you can enjoy, that you can moderate with, you know, and just enjoy responsibly.
Ellie, just turning back to your good self again, I can recall the time when I was at Cambridge back in the 80s, setting up the joys of Cambridge University Radio, etc. I'd go into a pub, etc. And if I asked for something like a blackcurrant and lemonade, it was almost as though I committed some obscene act. You know, it was just outrageous. How can I possibly have actually even raised that sort of issue? Do you think, again, we've changed our kind of perception on that in terms of obviously the experience that you'd had, where you go into a pub and if you're asking for an alcoholic drink that isn't the kind of standard accepted routine, then, you know, it's not good.
Yeah, certainly. I think when I look back 5 years ago, very much if you were the one in the group saying to people, I'm not drinking tonight, there was a lot of pressure.
You were the designated driver. That's it. Yes. End of.
And people take it upon themselves to sort of try and force you to drink. And I think what we're very mindful of, and when we conducted the research, we're very mindful that there will be a lot of pressure to drink, particularly for young people. You know, the research found that the figure on anxiety is even greater for younger people. And so I think over the years, I've definitely seen that lessen. And since like Dry January have helped make the category more accessible, more drinks, you know, Clenio included, have come onto the market. The quality is better now. And I think people are, and of course that coupled with availability, supermarkets now stock, for the most part, sections of non-alcoholic drinks. Mm-hmm. And bars and pubs are getting better at putting great non-alcoholic options and cocktails on their menu. So people do have a degree of confidence now to be able to go out and actually have a nice night and enjoy themselves and drink non-alcoholic drinks like Clenio, but also but feel great the next day and not be worried about the hangover. So I've certainly, as a business owner and in this category for the last 4 or 5 years, have definitely seen that pressure lessen, but it's not going to change overnight and we've still got a long way to go.
And Alex, advice from your good self in terms of people who might be listening to this, who might know somebody, a friend, a colleague, a member of the family, etc., they feel actually they're not really getting the message, etc. Is it just a case of you need to provide support and just generally nudge people in the direction of actually a more healthier approach to consuming drink and socialising, of course?
I think it's very important to have open conversations with your friends and family, people that you love around you, and not doing it in a judgmental way. I always think when you approach any difficult conversation in life, which particularly relates to health, it's setting. So thinking about the environment you're in, is it the appropriate time? Probably the queue in Tesco's is not ideal. You know, is it a quiet place you can have a conversation? Is it the right time? So is it a time where, you know, they've got a deadline the next day, or they're very stressed, or they just come home from work and they're really stressed out? Think about a time where they might be open and receptive to have that conversation. And then speak in a very clear way. You know, be direct. You know, sometimes people worry about approaching the issue in a direct way to say, look, I'm a little bit concerned about this. This is why. What do you think about it? Hear their thoughts and then be there to support and signpost. So signpost, if it's relating to alcohol, signpost them to the GP, support services such as Alcohol Anonymous, etc., to provide any more help. But, you know, most of the time, if you kind of frame things in that way, you know, sometimes people go, oh, just I don't want to talk about this. But that's, you go, that's fine. Respect your what you're saying. It's your choice to say that, and maybe approaching it another time. But often that approach will really help, you know, in terms of, you know, dealing and tackling with these kind of things.
And Ellie, how can people actually locate more material about the delights of Clenio?
So best place to head is to calenodrinks.com. We're also on most social media channels, Instagram at calenodrinks. And we're also available nationwide in Sainsbury's. So if you're interested in trying a bottle, if this has piqued your interest, then head into there. They've got a dedicated non-alcoholic section, and keep an eye out for it in bar and to a bar and pub coming to near you.
Is there any story behind the name, just out of interest? Why Calenia as opposed to Ellie's drink?
Yeah, good question. So a lot of the brand's inspiration, so the bottles are very colourful and very vibrant, and that's purposeful because I wanted to bring more joy into this category. When I had the idea a couple of months later, I travelled back to Colombia in South America. My family are from a city called Cali. And if you are from Cali, a bit like if you're from London, you're a Londoner, you are called a Caleño. And Cali is the capital of salsa. Everyone goes there to dance. It's a very vibrant, fun, loving city. And I wanted to just bring that name in to sort of represent what this drink is all about.
Well, there you go. The ultimate party. Caleño, Ellie Webb and Dr. Alex George and salsa. What could be any better? I mean, amazing. It's been awesome sharing some thoughts with both of you today. We'll wrap up with the usual questions. First of all, over to your good self, Dr. Alex. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme?
Yes, I have, for sure. And it's always good to speak to you and enjoy being on the show.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to hopefully connecting with you again. Likewise, Ellie, will you be kind enough to return?
I would love to return anytime.
Ellie Webb, the founder of non-alcoholic spirit Caleño, and Dr. Alex George, as we said, a superhero. Many thanks indeed. Take care now.
Thank you, Alex. You're a star.
Take care.
Lil, put aside the ego and embrace the moment.
It's time for another Midweek Drive transcontinental adventure.
Off we go again in so many marvellous ways. We've just actually been listening to Dr. Alex George, of course, talking about avoiding hangxiety. Yes, it's that sort of anxiety you feel if you've got a hangover. Hangxiety. I know, I find it difficult to believe. But that's what Alex George was all about. And we're just delighted now to welcome that awesome singer-songwriter from New York. It's Pamela Sue Mann. How are you, Pamela?
I'm great. Thank you. How are you, Alex?
Very good indeed. And it's nice to see that New York is looking as bright as ever.
We try.
I thought I'd use a backdrop of Corpus Christi in Texas because we've just been featuring an author from Texas, and why not indeed? But back with us again, like a joyous, wonderful vision of the summer, Graham Harper. Welcome, Graham. How are you?
I'm very summery.
Yeah, thank you very absolutely. Much. It's clearly, I mean, what better way to actually celebrate that as far as the UK is actually concerned, we've now actually had the highest number of COVID cases since January, which is great. So there we are. Win-win situation away ahead of Freedom Day. But still, that's life, as they say. Graham, how has life been treating you over the last few days, few weeks, etc., since last we featured you?
Well, my wife and I... Bernadette, who you know, we're really keen to get to France. We have a little flat there in the southwest of France, and we haven't been there for 2 years because we couldn't go 2019, and then 2020 came, and that was the end of that, and we're still in the same boat. We none of us know whether we can go abroad. I mean, you don't go anywhere because you don't know whether you're going to have to come back and isolate in a hotel somewhere for another £1,700 or whatever. I mean, it's just crazy.
It might be amber, it might be red, it might be green. It's a very confusing world. It's the sort of thing we actually need Pamela Sue Mann to write a song about, I feel. Pamela, confusion and the whole wonderful things like that. I mean, is it all go in the States? Is it a case of in New York? It's as though there'd never been a pandemic.
You know, it's so odd. I was just remarking to a friend the other day that it's strangely normal. You know, taking the subway in New York City in the blistering heat. Of course, people are wearing masks on the subway, thank goodness. But you're out and about, and it's like, I'm sorry about that. I just got the song. It's great, came through. You know, it's a bit of madness because it's strange how normal it seems when you're out and about. Everyone's out because it's summer. The numbers are down. The vaccination, you know, the percentages are up. And they've removed the request for mask wearing in public, inside and out. It's up to each individual business. So if I feel guilty. I feel guilty as a country because I feel like we're back to normal, and yet most of the world is not at all. So we're acutely aware of that.
On the plus side, Pamela, we can confirm that our Australian correspondent, Natasha Armstrong, they're back in full lockdown. So obviously, as they experience their winter in Australia, the cycle continues ever onwards. It just goes to show. Who knows where it's going to end? It's like some crazy Doctor Who plot, isn't it, Graham?
Oh, it's strange. Pamela, when you talk about blistering heat in New York, so... I've never been to New York. I've been to America, but I haven't been to New York. When you say it's blistering heat, so in London, we do have very, luckily, very hot days in the summer. And the maximum, probably, really maximum, would be about 35 degrees. So what about it? What is it in New York? Because we either hear it's really blisteringly hot, and then in the winter, it's absolutely freezing and thick snow, which we don't always guarantee here.
It's very extreme here. They consider it, because I know I've been researching it for gardening, because I've been obsessed with Monty Don and Gardener's World, and I've been...
Oh, brilliant.
Oh, I love it. I'm so obsessed. And I've got everybody I know hooked on it now as well. But I know that growing plants, it's all different here. So we're in what you would call zone 6 for planting. And it basically means... And New York is a big state, so it really varies. We are considered a subtropical climate.
Wow.
But it really is, I grew up in Massachusetts, and it's much more typically northeastern, which means we get, or we used to get, 4 predictable seasons, every season in its full glory. And I always felt very proud of that, because we would really, you know, get all the 4 seasons. Now here in New York, it's almost like we get 2 seasons. We get a freezing winter with snow, and we get a blistering summer, which I don't know Celsius. I'm always trying to figure out the calculation for that. But for Fahrenheit, we're talking 80s.
Mm. Or sort of mid-20s. Yeah, mid-20s.
75% humidity.
Oh, okay. Oh, we can beat you. That's all right.
Yeah, it's not a competition, Graham. We had a competition in 1776. We lost that, so no, we won't go any further.
But I have heard that it gets really hot there, even hotter than I think 70 or 80. So anyway.
Well, oh, never mind.
Really hot. Really, really hot. I think, yeah, in California it's 130 in Death Valley right now. It's insane.
That's probably why it's called Death Valley. The clue's in the name, Pamela. I'm just observing this. Before we introduce the awesome Hannah O'Brien, Pamela, would you like to introduce your latest tune, which is specially in French for Graham's French sort of joie de vivre and bonhomie, etc.? What are we about to listen to?
Well, we were actually talking about the last time that we were on with Graham, and we were talking about French new wave cinema, and we're talking about music. Well, so years ago, and this is kind of embarrassing, it's kind of name dropping, but I have to say it because it's crazy. My husband works with has worked and is good friends with Laurie Anderson, who we bow to daily. Who's an icon and a visionary and just a phenomenal woman. And she was very encouraging of Jerry's music, and she was very encouraging of my music. And she said to me, you know, you should do a cover of Padam by Edith Piaf. This was years ago. And I have this project with this wonderful artist, Swiss artist called Cat's Eye. And he's very indie and very sort of almost like a Jacques Brel a little bit, very like, quiet, smoky voice, very minimal and quirky. And he said, you know, let's do a project together. And I asked if we could do Padam, because I know he speaks French. So he literally spoon-fed me the lyrics. I do not remember them anymore. But I sang them, and it's almost in the style of sort of Françoise Hardy and Jacques Brel, you know. And it's called Padam, which is really this. Should I talk about the song for a quick second or no?
Oh, why not? I mean, il parle toujours avant moi et sa voix couvre ma voix.
Oh la la.
Well, it is for Graham. Thank you. And hello, lovely Hannah. it's such a sad song, because it's basically, unless I'm incorrect, it's about the parade of life, sort of passing you by, and the insanity of it, and how I'm sure Edith Piaf very much felt this way when she sang it. But it's the insistence and almost this cacophony of life. And Padan is like a sound, I think, the drum makes. And it's a very dramatic, torchy song. And yet we did a very sort of, you know, it'd be that kind of like chill out version of it. So there you go.
Qui m'obsède jour et nuit. Cette terre n'est pas née d'aujourd'hui. Elle vient d'aussi loin que je viens, traînée par 100 000 musiciens. Un jour cette terre me rendra folle. 100 fois j'ai voulu dire pourquoi, mais il m'a coupé la parole. Parle toujours avant moi, et sa voix couvre ma voix. Padam, 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 il arrive en courant derrière moi. Padam, 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 il me fait le coup du souviens-toi. Padam, padam, padam. C'est un air qui me montre du toit, et je traîne après moi comme une drôle d'erreur. Cet air qui sait tout par cœur. Il dit, rappelle-toi tes amours, rappelle-toi puisque c'est ton tour. Y'a pas de raison pour que tu ne pleures pas, avec tes souvenirs sur les bras. Et moi je revois ce qui reste, mes 20 ans font battre tambour. Je vois s'entrebattre des gestes, toute la comédie des amours sur cette terre qui va toujours. Padam, 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 et je t'aime de 14 juillet. Padam, 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 des toujours qu'on achète au rabais. Padam, 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 des futurs en voilà par paquet. Et tout ça pour tomber juste au coin là, sur l'air qui m'a reconnu. Écoutez le chahut qu'il me fait. Comme si tout mon passé défilait. Chagrin pour après, j'en ai tout un solfège sur cette terre qui bat comme un cœur de bois.
Awesome. Absolutely awesome. Edith Piaf, a little sparrow, would have been proud about that. Very much so. In so many delightful ways. Hannah O'Brien, welcome to the Midweek Drive. Welcome back again. Talking about the temperature in New York, the temperature in London. What's the temperature like in Gloucestershire?
Oh, it's 28 degrees Celsius today, which has been very lovely.
There we are.
Yeah, that's hot. That's
quite warm. Sizzling, you might well say. Sizzling. So how are you coping, Hannah?
What's Fahrenheit at 28 Celsius?
Mid 80s.
Very hot and humid, right?
So are you working indoors, Hannah? Are you working outdoors? Are you working from home? Is it a case of what's all this about Freedom Monday? We always go crazy in Gloucestershire in any case.
I mean, I'm still working from home and I will be for the foreseeable. Freedom Monday, great, but no office for me just yet.
Makes sense. Think the most exciting thing about Freedom Monday, we think, is that we can go freely to the rubbish dump and take all our rubbish, as opposed to having to book it a slot.
Yeah, it's amazing the little things that provide us with such joy and wisdom. We had hoped to be connecting with Luke Corradine from the Cannes Film Festival. I think Luke's probably going to a screening at present. And equally, bizarrely, Arthur Weingarten doesn't seem to be with us, but never mind. We were going to talk about the role of the director, the role of the sort of that connection between producer, director, and so on. Let's turn it around a little bit. Graham, we've talked a lot about how you've worked with composers in the past, whether it be Roger Lim with the BBC Radiophonic Workshop, whether it's be Dick Mills, other sort of areas. What do you look for? Justin, of course, Haywood from Star Cops, etc. What do you look for when you're sort of working with a composer? Are you a director who actually says, I want that piece of music, it's got to be exactly like Pamela Sue Mann in Ouch, otherwise it's pointless?
Wow, that's a big one. So I'm very excited when I meet composers, because when you edit any project, whether it's a film or television program, and I suppose even in a play, but no, in film and television, you edit. First of all, you get a production of it, which is the first edit, which we then work together and change the edit and get a fine cut, as it were, which everybody likes. Then you put the sound on. Well, you start to put the sound on, but you also then go to meet the composer. And when you discuss the various links or background pieces that you want, or they're going to, and you both agree the ins and outs of where the music should be. So invariably, a director will always want lots and lots of music. And a really good composer and a clever composer will say, no, there's brilliance in the silence sometimes. Allow the program, the characters and the performances to develop, and let the music be the third dimension to the scene, as it were, or the scenes. And I listen to that, and I usually agree and think that's really interesting that they have that aspect. I'm very nervous with the composers, because I love music and I always want to interfere, and I must be the bane of their lives, because but when I say interfere, it's always to do with, could I have in that little section there, or the middle eight, or wherever it's going to be, could I have a flugelhorn or a mandolin, or just hauntingly in the distance up in the heavens somewhere? Or, for example, and I'm going to stop in a second, but for example, on the one of the episodes of The House of Elliot, it was there was a scene which was, they were going to do off the peg kind of clothing. They were going into big fashion, multi-production fashion. And so they needed to get a lot of seamstresses to come in a factory situation. And so they went round all the schools in the local area that they were going to set up the factory to try and get girls who were about to leave school. This would be their first job, to be a seamstress in a haute couture, but off the peg stuff. So we did a montage of shots going around schools, you know, in the story set in the 20s, and seeing all these girls shyly coming in and then being tested, etc. It was a big montage which needed a big musical score, and how they prepared the girls to become part of a big industry. And I said to the composer, who, fantastic composer, who created a lovely piece of music for this montage, and I said, there's one thing missing. And he went, oh God, yes, you're all the same, you lot. And I said, well, what it is, I would love there to be that sound of singing that comes from the playground. This is the last moment these kids are going to be at school before they enter adult life, working life. And I'd love there to be that lovely da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da somewhere just in the heaven of the music, echoed deep in the distance, so you can just about hear it. And he did. And what it did to that scene, it was covered beautifully by him already, was just a piece of magic, just this haunting. It made you, well, not cry, but it just made you feel sad for them giving up the childhood, basically. I've stopped.
Now, Pamela, obviously, just a word there when you're writing music for Graham, flugelhorns, very important.
No.
May I ask Graham a question? Wouldn't there be as well a music supervisor and they temp in scores sometimes? And so
say that again. Would there be
a music supervisor or someone sort of an intermediary who sources music and then and there's a composer. So maybe the composer is the same person, but
I have to say, well, I'm thinking about the series called Bergerac, which was a multi-episodic series. It went for about 15 years, 12 episodes a year, set in Jersey, you know, detective order. And on a big series like that, there would be a supervisor, but he would not be any... He wouldn't necessarily be creative. He would be attached to the edit suites, all the different suites and the sound suites. So he would organise, really, arranging for the music to be arrive in time to be dubbed, etc. So he wouldn't be the same as the composer. However, in general, in my experience in television, I very rarely work with a music supervisor. I know that happens in movies, but normally it is the editor who will and the sound mixer who will, in the dubbing suites, who will arrange and lay down all the music and make sure it gets from the composer to the suite in order to be dubbed, etc.
Right. There seems to be now so much, so much music sourced in shows. And do you feel like that's changed a lot?
I have worked on shows where, you mean when you say source, you mean like pop music being used in, or?
Yes, I mean, because some of these older television shows that are just brilliantly composed, you know, and now it can be a little annoying because constantly you've got this song and that song and this song. And of course there are still moments, there's still a composer, but it feels like now more songs are brought in as opposed to the composer.
Yes. However, I haven't had that experience. I've worked on shows where there's been a composer purely has been booked, not by my choice sometimes. I mean, sometimes that's happened in my career, but most of the time I join a program and do episodes. So the composer's already booked in and I love that. And I love that moment. I love going to talk to the composer and talking about music. If there's a chance to talk about music just because we want to talk about music, never mind it's for that program. I really enjoy that. I should have been a musician, I think.
Well, the psychological component like that you talk about, it brings a whole other dimension. You're thinking musically too, so that's enhancing everything.
I absolutely, and I do. I hear the kind of music I'm looking forward to. And usually the composer, you impart that to the composer. You say, you know, you want it to be a jazz score, you want it to, and most of them that I've worked with, whatever you want to do, or country and western, whatever, they will adapt to that and try and bring that into. But of course, there's a producer who also has his idea of what it should all be as well. So you have to be a bit careful. But one-offs, that's your baby with the composer.
Let's move on to Hannah. I mean, obviously, Pamela is speaking with reference to having several Resonance rewinds under her belt, in which we've actually specifically looked back at old television shows or mature shows long before you're born, like The Time Tunnel, like The Incredible Hulk, and other such magical sort of moments from that point of view. But Hannah, does music kind of have an impact on you when you watch your TV show in particular? I mean, would you like to see sort of various aspects brought in, or is it a case of, frankly, as long as the story's there, I don't care?
Honestly, I think the best kind of music within a show is one that builds up your kind of your emotion as you're watching it, but you don't necessarily notice that there's music there. But if you had the music taken away, it would be a whole different watching experience. Music is so important in TV and film, but I think that the best pieces are the ones which are most subtle. And make you feel things without realizing that it's down to that music. I don't know how the rest of the panel kind of feel about this, but that would be my thoughts personally.
I agree with you. I think if you start noticing the music, you're not really, I think the plot's been lost, basically. I think you're right. It's quietly, it's just divisive because it's quietly driving you into what the director and the producer are wanting you to feel. But clever music, really well thought out and emotional and from the depth of the heart of the composer, it does all that you've just said. It's quietly there and doing its job.
And clearly, Pamela, when you're actually composing from your own point of view, you have all sorts of inspirations that are kind of bubbling away in terms of the creative process. I mean, is it something you'd consider actually in terms of writing a soundtrack for a TV program, a line from you know, anything, or is it just a case of, no, you prefer to focus on your own creative creation, like Break, for instance?
Oh, no. I mean, here in the States, it's ever so hard to I know so many musicians that have tried to break into composing for film, and Jerry has composed for a few films, and but it's not what he does. And I've been asked to do some composition for some short films and things like that, and I adore it. I love it. It's such a challenge. And oftentimes when that happens, because I play piano, but I am David Baron called me an essential player. So in other words, I am not Liberace. I am not Shostakovich. It's sort of like chopsticks. but there's melody. I love simple melody, and I feel like so much starts with that. So I relish the opportunity. Anybody, you know, when anyone asks me to do something, I absolutely do it. But here in the States, as we all know, people, you know, I know a young, he's going to be a freshman in NYU, Donald Lewis's son, Archie Lewis Harris, and he's going to NYU for specifically for music film scoring. That's what he wants to do with his life. And it's very competitive, and it's very difficult. Some people have done it. Trent Reznor has done it. You'd be the guy from Oingo Boingo, Danny Elfman, has done it. Some people have broken into it, but it almost seems like that's what they get known for. So on that level, it's really hard to break in, but it's a phenomenal thing to be able to do, but skill set as well. So what I usually do is I call people that I know that do it, and then I ask their help, and you learn a lot that way.
It's strategic, but it's effective. Graham, who would you like to throw questions to, Hannah or Pamela or both?
You caught me on the hop. Hannah, I don't know you, and I don't know what you do.
Graham, you mean you've forgotten all those telephonic links you did when Hannah was in the studio and you were in other parts of the country? Honestly, Hannah, I'm sorry. They forget
so soon. I'm so sorry, Hannah. But, well,
it was quite a while ago. I'll let you off, Graham. It was coming up 7 years ago now. I used to study journalism at the University of Lincoln, and Alex was one of my lecturers. And now I work in insights for a sales and marketing company working in food and drink, which is really, really good fun. I get to see all sorts of new products. One of the products I've been working on has been peanut butter, but I've also worked on ice cream and milkshakes.
Does that mean you get lots of free samples? Yes.
It does. It's a fantastic free samples. It's not particularly great if you're trying to watch your weight.
So what do you do? I mean, is yours to do with advertising or?
So I look through sales data and I tell salespeople how to sell our products better to supermarkets and other wholesale companies and little news agents even.
So who employs you?
I'm employed by an agency, and then we work on behalf of bigger brands.
Ah, oh, I got it. It's like an advertising agency. That same kind of thing.
Similar concept, yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It's promoting all sorts of things. Hannah, would you like to give your brands a shameless plug here, so you can actually go back to the back to the office as and when, and actually say at least they now have heard of this in New York?
Well, we work. One of our brands is Meridian, which is a peanut butter.
Yes.
We also work for Mars Ice Cream, Mars milkshakes, Unilever, Chewit sweets, Twinings tea bags.
And other health-giving properties. Fantastic.
But there's lots of peanut butter out there, so what's so special about this one?
This one is made from 100% peanuts. So no palm oil, no nasty stuff. It's just 100% natural. You know exactly what's in it. It's,
and what's it called?
Meridian peanut butter.
Meridian peanut butter. Okay.
Yeah, Meridian, like a kind of equatorial thing, presumably, or maybe not. Pamela, are you a peanut butter fan? Is it so? Because, I mean, my first encounter with peanut butter was this strange, exotic thing, which was based, obviously, in the United States. I mean, you know, is it something which is still embedded in the culture there?
Growing up, you were either Skippy or Jif, and you were very loyal to your peanut butter brand. People who ate Jif did not eat Skippy, and people who ate Skippy would not get near Jif. And furthermore, it was more specific than that, because if you liked chunky nuts in your peanut butter, then that was your thing. And you, and someone offered you creamy peanut butter, then that just wasn't good, because you were really loyal, not only to your brand of peanut butter, but the type of peanut butter that you liked. And that is still true today, although, like, you know, Hannah works with a healthy brand. Jif, neither Jif nor Skippy are particularly healthy. They're very yummy. But a lot of the health food stores sell healthy forms of peanut butter, and there are so many more. There's one called Jason's, I think, that's fantastic. And they do almond and cashew. However, my daughter and I are obsessed with peanut butter cookies. So it is really something that people should try. And they should be such that when they come out of the oven, they're gooey and mushy, and then they eventually harden. But you don't want to cook them too much. And you have to keep the fork. But yes, peanut butter is an obsession of mine as well.
Have you come across Marmite, which has got nothing to do with peanut butter, but is that a brand you know of?
Hannah or myself?
Yes. Have you eaten Marmite?
Well, my closest friends happen to be non-Americans, and I have two Welsh friends who I adore. We call each other bananas after Bananarama. We're like the three bananas, and I call them my Welshies, and I love them. And Joe, one of the Welshies, absolutely loves, what are those, Twiggles? Twiggit? They're Marmite. Oh,
Twiggles, is it? Twiggles.
Yeah. And she's gone to Myers of Keswick, which is a British shop in New York City that is like the place to get all of these your sausage rolls and your King's crisps and she bought us some of those Twiglets, and I have tried Marmite, which to me, I don't know the difference between Marmite and Vegemite.
One's like the Australians, really.
Yeah. One's got beef extract, and the others are vegetables, I suppose.
I see.
Sorry, Hannah, that's your territory.
Bovril is the one with beef. Marmite is vegetarian. It's a yeast extract. And then Vegemite, I think, is vegetable. I'm not really sure. I've not worked with Vegemite.
You all like it?
Do you sell Marmite and Bovril at my company as well?
I love Marmite sandwiches. That the toasted sandwich with Marmite, absolutely brilliant. But not everybody. You either love it or you hate it. So,
and of course, Pamela, if you went to Australia and talked about eating Skippy, they'd think you are a kangaroo eater. But let's not go there at all, because it would be deeply upsetting in so many sort of ways, really. Although maybe I'm just the only one, Graham. I actually remember Skippy the bush kangaroo and how he could communicate with the children on a week by week basis. So it goes. I hadn't anticipated actually going into a sort of in-depth study of Marmite, Vegemite and various other bits and pieces. But Pamela, have you got any questions you want to put to the team in our remaining moments today?
Okay, here's a serious question. How are you all feeling with the state of the world at the moment? Are you feeling hopeful? Are you feeling okay? You know, how's the heart? I really would like to know.
Hannah, how's the heart?
We need directing.
Okay, because on my little square I can see Hannah and then Graham and then Alex, because I want to know how Alex is doing. And I'm feeling hopeful but guilty. That's my answer to it.
I'm hopeful that we'll get out of this pandemic, but I can't see when. I don't see it's going to be next Monday, which is what Boris Johnson,
trust our Prime Minister, Graham. I'm shocked.
It is strange. You're right, but I don't. I just think it's time we had some sense and sensibility, and we don't seem to have it in our government. I mean, they're all at it doing. It all seems to be power. Where there's power, it's all to do with them getting more power and getting money, it seems, and to hell with the people. And I'm afraid I've had enough. So I don't have a lot of hope. But I do generally in the world, I have hope that we'll, please goodness me, I hope we have some peace and quiet. But we all need to get over the pandemic everywhere. So I'm hopeful, but I don't think it's going to happen very soon.
He's not the sort of person you'd actually want to have as a kind of avuncular, friendly soul, is he? In fact, that's quite a terrifying individual when you sort of see
him. Well, he's behind you at the moment. He looks terrifying there.
He's always behind me. It's his Eton background. What an Eton mess. It's a cake reference, but still, or a dessert reference. Hannah, what about yourself? Are you hopeful or have you given up?
I think hopeful, a little hesitant.
Hopeful, hesitant hammer. It's 3-8. We did a feature with H from Steps earlier today. Fantastic.
Oh, fantastic. I think just trying not to get too excited for everything to open back up again, because I feel like it's asking for trouble. I don't know if that's being too pessimistic. But yeah, hopefully everything will continue to go smoothly with the easing of lockdown. And we can have a normal Christmas. Is that too early to mention that?
No, it's going to come very quickly.
It's so shocking. I mean, it's almost as though you were regenerating at that particular period of time. It's amazing. There's a slightly younger version of Graham back in the day. I believe shortly before we actually met, really, or in that particular instance, Graham. We haven't changed, really.
Sorry, say that again.
I think that was shortly before we actually met, basically, or at least a couple of months before.
Couple of months before, yeah, 84.
There you
84,
are.
85, and 1984, yeah.
Caves of Androzani, it just goes to show. Hannah, has that sort of helped answer the question in terms of we've taken padam. Sorry, I was going to Pink Panther mode there, or French. But nothing to do with your latest awesome track, which of course is available, etc. Is that available for download and purchase by 16 Sunrisers at present?
Absolutely. It's interesting. It's all hitting me as usual, and I'm realizing that, oh my goodness, once again, it's thematic. Padam is thematic for what we're talking about. Yes, 16 Sunrisers right now. It's on Bandcamp through 16 Sunrisers. I'm going to try and make it available through my platforms as well. But you can go on 16 Sunrisers Bandcamp and you can listen to it and you can download it and vibe out.
Can I ask a question before you go, Pamaran? So how prolific are you? How often do you create music? Is it every day, every hour of every day, or do you have dull moments? Do you have a blank page and you can't think of something, or nothing's happening?
There's a term, Freudian term, right? It's called morning liberation. And when something really horrible occurs, like a death or a birth, or which is good, all this inspiration comes pouring and flooding out. And I had one of those recently in the past few years. I went to a panel with Bill Withers years ago, and he was so great. And he said, you know, I only sit down at the piano and write when I'm in love or when I'm inspired. And I'm much more, I'm not as disciplined, and I'm much more instinctive. So I will only create if my muse leads me to create. And sometimes it could be several songs in a day or while I dream. And sometimes it could be the written word. And I've been studying poetry with an amazing teacher for the first time ever. And I'm I knew nothing about poetry in an academic way, but I've been writing it. So now I'm actually writing every day some kind of prose or thoughts. And I made a writer's vow to a page a few years ago, which was basically, I will write until my senses leave me or my ability to write ceases in this lifetime. I made a promise to do that. So it's sort of a discipline for writing. But the music and songs is not always an everyday
thing. It could always be entitled Ode to a Meridian Sunrise, really.
Yeah. Did this all start when you were a child, or was it something that you developed? Well, of course, it must be in your body and your soul, obviously. But
yes, I was a dreamy child, and I think that I told Alex this in our first interview when we were talking about the bears. But it's basically that when I was 4 or 5, I wrote this song. I was about 5, and my mom had started me with piano, and I wrote the song, and I'll sing it for you now. I can't remember all the lyrics. Spring is a happy thing and a very lovely thing. When you hear the birdies sing, then you really know it's spring.
That's brilliant.
My first song when I was 5.
That's brilliant. Have you made that? You should put that to music.
Maybe I should put a really cool backbeat.
It needs to be sampled. It needs to be put out there. It needs to actually sort of be sort of go global.
And it needs a flugelhorn,
of course, or at least some other musical wonderments. Hannah, would you like to show that you still got the magic and like to put those last two questions to Pamela Sue Mann and Graham Harper, please?
Pamela and Graham, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Yes. Very, very nice. Really good.
You can tell Hannah's old school because she uses that phrase, telephonic link. We've been on Zoomers for the last year and a half. It doesn't matter. It's okay. Hannah, has it been a good Zoomer for you?
I'm recalling it from 7 years ago, Alex. Yes, it's been fab as always. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. And Pamela, Graham and Hannah, will you return in the near future?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, yes. And I love telephonic link. I think it's so wonderful. We should never stop using it.
No, absolutely. Exactly. Keep that to the fore. We'll move to Zoom, but the rest of us will carry on telephonically working on that basis. Hannah O'Brien, Pamela Sue Mann, and Graham Harper, huge thanks. Be well, be safe, be happy.
And you, thank you very much.